What amazes me is that less than 24 hours ago in this very place, there was over 2,100 fourth and fifth grade students here for a thing called Super Start. And yes, it's a great thing that our Kids View department hosts every year. And what's more amazing is that we have a great custodial staff that cleaned this place up and got it ready for this morning. So pretty cool stuff. Well, you'll notice that there's no introduction in the e-news today, and that's because I don't have time for an introduction. There's 14 points in this sermon. So here's the introduction I give to you to prepare your hearts and draw you into this sermon. Turn in your Bibles to Genesis 49. That's it. That's the introduction. We're going to get right into the Word today. We have a lot to say. The Lord has a lot to say to us. Genesis chapter 49, verse 1, continuing, I think, from the blessing that Jacob was giving to his grandsons last week. Verse 49 of Genesis. Then Jacob called for his sons, and he said, "Gather around so I can tell you what will happen to you in the days to come. Assemble and listen, sons of Jacob. Listen to your father Israel. Reuben, you are my firstborn, my might, the first sign of my strength, excelling in honor, excelling in power. Turbulent as waters, you will no longer excel, for you went up to your father's bed, onto my couch, and defiled it. Simeon and Levi, you are brothers. Their swords are weapons of violence. Let me not enter into their council. Let me not join their assembly, for they have killed men in their anger and hamstrung oxen as they pleased. Cursed be their anger, so fierce, and their fury so cruel. I will scatter them in Jacob and disperse them in Israel. Judah, your brothers will praise you. Your hand will be on the neck of your enemies. Your father's sons will bow down to you. You are a lion's cub, O Judah. You return from the prey, my son, like a lion. He crouches and lies down like a lioness who dares to rouse him. The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet until he comes to whom it belongs, and the obedience of the nations is his. He will tether his donkey to a vine, his colt to the choicest branch. He will wash his garments in wine, his robes in the blood of grapes. His eyes will be darker than wine, his teeth whiter than milk. Zebulun will live by the seashore and become a haven for ships. His border will extend toward Zidon. Issachar is a raw-boned donkey lying between two saddlebags. When he sees how good is his resting place and how pleasant is his land, he will bend his shoulder to the burden and submit to forced labor. Dan will provide justice for his people as one of the tribes of Israel. Dan will be a serpent by the roadside, a viper along the path that bites the horse's heels so that its riders tumble backwards. I look for you for your deliverance, O Lord. Gad will be attacked by a band of raiders, but he will attack them at their heels. Asher's food will be rich. He will provide delicacies fit for a king. Naphtali is a doe set free that bears beautiful fawns. Joseph is a fruitful vine near a spring whose branches climb over a wall. With bitterness, archers attacked him. They shot at him with hostility, but his bow remained steady. His arm stayed limber because of the hand of the mighty one of Jacob, because of the shepherd, the rock of Israel, because of your father's God who helps you, because of the Almighty who blesses you with blessings of the heavens above and blessings of the deep that lies below, blessings of the breast and the womb. Your father's blessings are greater than the blessings of the ancient mountains, than the bounty of the age-old hills. Let all these rest on the head of Joseph, on the brow of the prince among his brothers. Benjamin is a ravenous wolf. In the morning he devours the prey, in the evening he divides the plunder. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father said to them when he blessed them, giving each the blessing appropriate to him." Let's pray and ask God about blessing today. God, I suspect that everyone in here would like a blessing, a favorable word from you over us. And in fact, you have spoken that blessing in your son, Jesus. I pray that you'll help us to receive it today, to hear it clearly. Every person here, every name that you have called, to hear clearly your blessing for their life. And would you help me do it? It's in your son's name we pray. Amen. Well, we are still in the Hebrews 11 Genesis Hall of Fame series. I didn't read from Hebrews 11 today because it's the same verse that we read last week. Jacob is at the end of his life. He's sitting on the bed. He's leaning on his staff. He blessed his grandsons last week, and that's going to play into what we do here in just a moment. And now he blesses his 12 sons. He had 12 sons. Remember, this whole thing started when he married these two women, Rachel and then Leah. And they had this contest to see who could have the most kids, even using their handmaids to get into the action there. And Jacob comes at the end of his life and he says, I want to bless all of my sons. This is one of the most important things that happens in a father's life and for all the sons, for the inheritance to happen before he dies. So he calls them all in. I believe it's the same instance as when he blessed Ephraim and Manasseh, because it says there in verse 1, then Jacob called for his sons. So it's at the same setting. He knows he's getting ready to die, and he says, I want to say some words of blessing on all of my sons. And remember, we said this about blessings, that blessings are part the Father's will. They're part prayer. That's why they often say, and now may God. And they're also part prophecy. And this one is very clearly prophecy, because he says in verse 1, gather around so I can tell you what will happen to you in the days to come. So he definitely understands. I'm going to tell you what I think of you boys, and I'm praying to God for you, and I'm also prophesying. The Lord is speaking through me, and he's going to tell you what's going to happen in your life. And so he says, gather around so I can tell you what will happen in the days to come. So we have these 12 tribes. And so in your e-news, I've got written down some things that you're just going to have to check out on your own. Again, I've got 14 points. I've not even started yet. Okay? But there's the names, there's the meaning of their names, there's the mom that gave birth to them. Sometimes it was Rachel and Leah, sometimes it was their handmaids, Bilhah and Zilpah, that got into the fray there. And so we have these 12 sons who became these 12 tribes and got these 12 blessings and these 12 inheritances, which leads us to the map today. And I'm going to try to do as much map stuff as I can, because I'm just interested in this stuff. I'm going to draw this in for you. You guys know the Holy Land. There's the Sea of Galilee. The Jordan River runs down here into the Dead Sea, and then you know on this side is the Mediterranean Sea, all right? And this is what we call the Holy Land, the land of promise, that all of them, and if you look at all these names, these are all the names of the tribes and where they eventually landed. If you want to know, talk about their birth and you want to see where they were born, then you just go back to Genesis 29 and 30, and that's where all these 12 were born. If you want to see how they got their land, then you can go to Joshua 13 through 19. It's super interesting stuff. It describes all the borders of all the land that they got. And so you can find out how they got these places. This is obviously an exact representation of the way the map looked in the Bible times, all right? Because I've done my study, all right? So we get there, and we get to this map, and we find these 12 blessings for these 12 guys who became the 12 tribes who received 12 inheritances. And here's what's amazing. This has to do with me and you. Because through Jesus Christ, because he's going to come from this nation and from this map, and through Jesus Christ, we become a part of this family and this tribe and these people. Our names are written there. Maybe not literally, but in a sense, through Jesus Christ, our names are written. And so we come all these years later, 4,000 plus years later, and we find ourselves on this map. And so that's why we're studying it together today. And we begin with his very firstborn son. Here's what he says in verse 2. Assemble and listen, sons of Jacob. Listen to your father, Israel. Now, I don't know why he took the pattern that he did, but he starts with all the 6 sons of Leah, which leads him to his firstborn, Reuben. You see Reuben there in verses 2 and 3 and 4. He says, Reuben, you're my firstborn. And is this supposed to be the favorite son? This is the one that first shows the strength of the father, that I'm going to have somebody to carry on the family name. You are excelling in honor and you are excelling in power, but you're not going to excel anymore. In fact, he rips away the privileges of the firstborn in this speech, because you may recall that there was a time in the history that Reuben went in and had relations with Bilhah, the wife of his father, and kind of his stepmother. And because of that, his inheritance was taken away. You don't find anybody famous from the tribe of Reuben. Really quick trivia question. So name somebody famous in the Bible from the tribe of Reuben. There's not anybody. You got a sandwich. That was it. Thank you. I'll be here all week. So Reuben, no longer will you excel. He doesn't even make it into the promised land proper. He stays over here on the east side of the Jordan, and his land kind of gets taken away, and Reuben kind of fades into the woodwork. And then we come to the next two sons, Simeon and Levi. Now, you don't want to come out for the blessing after he's just said what he said to Reuben. It's like, you know, being the batter after somebody just got beaned, right? And so now he puts these two together, Simeon and Levi. I'm ticked at you guys too, because you guys are the ones that went and killed all the Shechemites. You killed them because of what they did to Dinah. Remember we talked about that story. You killed an entire town in your anger and in your fury. I don't want any part of your anger and fury. Now, this what's amazing to me is this is something that happened 70 years earlier. 70 years. And still at the end of his life, he's going, hey, I remember you guys got crazy with your swords and you killed a bunch of people. You even took down some oxen, and I'm not going to bless you for that. And so here's what he says. He says, you are, verse 7, look what it says. You will be scattered in Jacob and dispersed in Israel. Now let's look at the map here. This is really interesting stuff. You'll see that Judah has this major portion down here in the south part, but you see this little section here for Simeon. Simeon, you're going to be scattered. What literally happened, by the time they got into the promised land, they just were given some cities in the midst of the tribe of Judah, and eventually they spread, and they just dispersed all through Israel until about 400 years later, you can't really find Simeon as a tribe hanging out together. Then you might be looking on this map and saying, well, where is Levi? Levi, in fact, is not on this map because Levi didn't get an inheritance. But you remember what happened to them? They had Moses and Aaron come from them. Aaron became the high priest, and so this becomes the Levitical Levi priesthood. They didn't get an inheritance. Their inheritance, God said, your inheritance is you get to serve me in the temple. So they got no land. They were, again, were dispersed all through Israel because at some point they gave them cities all through the land of Israel that were just there for Levites. They could live there, but they really didn't have a territory per se. All right, we got three down. We got nine to go. So now we've got through the first three, and we're coming to ask this question. Okay, who's going to be the son of promise? Who's going to be the one that's going to carry on this promise of Abraham? Well, the answer is found in verses 8 through 12. His name is Judah. His name literally, Yehuda, means praise. And because Leah was praising God when she gave birth to him, but in the sense of he's going to have King David and then King Jesus come from his loins. Are you guys exhausted yet? I'm winded. Judah is going to have David and Jesus from him. I don't have a whole lot of time to spend now because I'm going to save him for the end of the sermon. He's like the middle of the cinnamon roll. We're going to eat him last, all right? Verse 11, I don't know where that came from. Anyway, verse 11 says this really interesting thing, though. I want you to see this middle part of verse 11. He will wash his garments in wine and his robes in the blood of grapes. What in the world does that mean? One of the guys that I was reading this week, studying for this, he said that to wash your robes in the blood of grapes or in wine, wine equals prosperity. It means that you're successful. You got good grapes, you got good vineyards, and you got wine. Wine is so plentiful, you're using it as wash water. It's just a common liquid. You're so rich and you're so wealthy, you're washing your clothes. I know you guys are saying, well, that's going to stain those clothes. I know, but that's not the point. This is a prophecy. He's saying you're going to have so much prosperity that you can actually wash your clothes in wine. Now, look at this really cool thing that ties Jesus into this. In the first miracle that Jesus does in Cana of Galilee in John chapter 2, what's he do? He turns common drinking water into wine. At the Last Supper, Jesus is sitting with his disciples, and he takes common wine and turns it into what? His blood. Revelation 7, these people who are walking around with white robes, who are they? These are the ones who have been washed in the blood of the Lamb and made clean. He turns the washing of water, the washing of wine and garments into the blood of Jesus Christ. It's a picture of the eternity. And the crowd says, ooh, ah. All right? It's pretty amazing, isn't it? Now, we can't stay here very much longer. We got to move on. All right? Zebulun. Zebulun, he says, you're going to become a haven for ships. Don't get caught up in this too much. You can see that he's right here. He's kind of landlocked. How's he going to become a haven for ships? We don't know. Maybe it's that he's close enough that a lot of his trade went this way. There is a river that comes through here, so maybe access to the Mediterranean. We don't know about Zebulun. This is the prediction. We don't know how it turns out historically. Issachar, if you go on down there, and this is the last of the sons of Leah in verses 14 and 15, you see that it alludes to him being under taxation in the future. At some point, Issachar is going to look at his land and go, yeah, we're not going to defend it. We're just going to pay the taxes for the people that overcome us. That's what those verses mean. But what I'm really interested in about Zebulun and Issachar is this. In Isaiah chapter 9, verse 1, you guys know that verse from the Christmas story. It leads to predicting the coming of Jesus Christ. In 9:1, it says, in the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and Naphtali, but in the future, he will honor Galilee of the Gentiles by the way of the sea. You guys probably know this, but I'm going to draw it in here anyway. There is a highway that comes up here called the way of the sea, the Via Maris, and it comes through like this, north of the Sea of Galilee. So it runs right through the territory of Zebulun and Issachar, and he's saying, you've been in darkness. because you walked away from me, but there's going to come a time where something spectacular is going to happen by the way of the sea in the Gentiles. In fact, Nazareth, we'd put Nazareth somewhere in there, the hometown of Jesus Christ. Signs on the road when you come in, this is the hometown of the Messiah. Pretty good, better than winning a state championship, all right? We're halfway there. Here we go to Dan. In verses 16 and 17, we come to Dan. And again, here's what Jacob shifts and does. He does the first six sons of Leah, and then he comes and he does the handmaid sons, the four of them. Not in order, but he just lumps them in here. You can kind of tell that they're kind of castaways here, all right? He starts off with Dan. Dan's going to provide justice. We don't know much about this, but we do know that he was one of the tribe that Gideon came from. Samson came from, and he was a judge that led them out of out of their oppression from the Philistines. I can't speak now. My tongue just tied up. The Lord is it's weary. I need a massage. Okay, I'm fine. I don't know what's wrong with me. Thank you. What'd you say? Focus? Okay, yes, I will. So Samson comes from this tribe. Is this an allusion to Samson? We don't know. He provides justice. That word there, justice, means to be somebody who vindicates or makes right. And so Samson actually does that with the Philistine people. And then we get to Gad, verse 19. It just simply says Gad's going to be attacked by a band of raiders. You see that Gad's over here on the east side of Jordan. And right to the east of him would be the Ammonites. There would be a lot of wars and battles going back and forth. So it says, Gad, you're going to be fighting a lot. You'll be attacked by bands of raiders, but you're going to attack them back and chase them. At their heels means they're running away. All right? And then you have Asher. Asher's food's going to be rich. He's up here in this very fertile plain. We've actually been there, the plain of Megiddo and Jezreel. And it's just really fertile soil and a beautiful place. And you're going to have good grapes and good wheat and good oil, olive oil. You're going to prosper and you're going to supply food for kings. We don't know how that plays out historically, but that's what Jacob said. Naphtali, you're a doe set free that bears beautiful fawns. Now, if you can get past the fact that a doe is not a very manly thing to compare me to, Naphtali gets two very cool blessings. He's free and he has lots of kids. He bears beautiful fawns. And so, again, you know about the blessings of Israel. He's free and he has fruitfulness, and that's a blessing. Now, that brings us to the last two sons. You guys remember the story of Jacob. Jacob's favorite wife was Rachel. He's really the only one that he wanted. But Rachel bore two sons late in his life, Jacob and then Joseph and then Benjamin. And we start with Joseph. In five verses, in 22 through 26, he really talks about how awesome Joseph is, and he gives him really the best blessing of all the sons. Remember, Joseph has always been his favorite. As a little kid, he got the colored robe. His mom was his favorite, and so Joseph's always been favored above all the sons, even though he was born later in the list. He spends five verses blessing him and recalling his journey. I want you to see, because we've talked about the blessings, Old Testament blessings, and we've talked about how important they are in the Old Testament to get these four things. And they're all listed here in the blessings of Joseph. When you look in verse 23 and 24, with bitterness, archers attacked him. His bow remained steady. One of the blessings of the Old Testament is you overcome your enemies. Joseph has overcome his enemies. First his brothers, then Pharaoh and all his people, and now he's the second in command in Egypt. So he has overcome his enemies. That's a blessing. Then you go down to the end of verse 25, blessings of the breast and the womb. He's given him kids and fruitfulness. That's a blessing that everybody wanted in the Bible times. All right? Then you see in verse 26, your father's blessings are greater than the blessings of the ancient mountains, than the bounty of the age-old hills. In other words, all the earth has given you everything you have. He's given him prosperity. There's only one blessing left. He needs inheritance. And that's another puzzle. If you look at this thing, you say, well, if Joseph was the favorite, how come he didn't get any land? Joseph, his name, never gets on the map. But it does get on the map. Because remember last week we gave this land to his two sons. So his son Ephraim, and then his son, there is West Manasseh, and then there is East Manasseh. This is all Joseph. Look at how much of the land that takes up. Joseph got, in fact, by square miles, almost as much land as the rest of them put together. And he got a double portion through Ephraim and Manasseh, making him the most important son. So Joseph really does get a cool blessing from his father. Just a note, out of Ephraim came the great leader Joshua, who led after Moses into the promised land. And after Manasseh came the great leader Gideon, who defeated the Amalekites with 300 guys with pitchers, torches, and trumpets. You guys didn't know you're getting a review of the entire Old Testament today, did you? Verse 27, Benjamin is the last born son of Rachel. In fact, she died giving birth to Benjamin. And she called him Ben-Oni, the son of my pain and my struggle. And of course, dad comes along and says, no, he's the son of my strength, and calls him Benjamin. And this is really just this small little tribe here, but they're really known for being great warriors and fighters. Interesting, out of this tribe comes the first king of Israel, King Saul. And if you fast forward to the New Testament, this other guy named Saul, who became the Apostle Paul, was from the tribe of Benjamin. And so, those are the 12 tribes. So far, a very cool sermon. But now we have to ask ourselves this really important question. So what? And we're in church and we're looking at a Bible map. It must be holy, I guess. But what is the meaning for my life? Why is this important? Why do we need to know this in 21st century America? So I've got two important things for us to look at today. And hopefully this will make sense of this map. Because here's what I'm telling you. This map is your history. If you get this map, if you understand this map, if you understand the ins and the outs of all the stuff that happens in this place that we call Israel, the Holy Land, then you understand everything that God wants to do in your life. So it's a very important map. There's two important things that come from this map. Number one, let's look in verse 28, and let's look at this thing called appropriate blessing. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is what their father said to them when he blessed them, giving each the blessing appropriate to him. Now, you might ask yourself, a blessing? These weren't all blessings. I mean, how can they be called blessings? When you look at Reuben and say, Reuben, you're no longer the firstborn. You don't get into the birthright or the double portion of the inheritance. What if you look at the life of Simeon and Levi? You guys don't even get a place. You're going to be forgotten. Levi, you don't even get a territory. You just get some towns. That doesn't feel blessed. Does that feel blessed to you? Hey, Reuben, cursed be you because you slept with my wife. Simeon and Levi, cursed be you because of your anger and your fierceness and the way you killed people. I don't even want to be in your presence anymore. Well, that doesn't feel like a blessing, that he gave them each a blessing appropriate to them. Where you look at the lives of people like Zebulun and Gad and Asher and Naphtali, they each get like one line. It's like dad got tired in the blessing time and said, yeah, Gad, you get this, and Asher, you get that. Kind of like leftovers. So how is it that we have these words that he gave them a blessing appropriate to them? How is this appropriate? Well, number one, it's appropriate because some of their actions resulted in what happened. And they sinned. Reuben slept with someone he wasn't supposed to sleep with. Simeon and Levi killed people out of anger. So it's appropriate. It's appropriate. That's their punishment. Your punishment is you get messed up with the inheritance. That's the way it is. You made wrong choices. Now, you're going to say to me, well, Judah made wrong choices too, and he did. I'm going to get back to that in just a moment. It's appropriate not only because of the actions that some of these guys committed, it's appropriate because some of the sins that are committed and the actions are committed against people. Take Joseph, for instance. You really don't mind Joseph getting a double portion at this blessing, do you? It's appropriate because he spent much of the first 30 years of his life being betrayed by his brothers, threatened to be killed by his brothers, being hated by his brothers, being thrown in prison. It wasn't until age 30 that he really excelled and became second in command in Egypt. And so you look at Joseph and go, yeah, that's the way it's supposed to turn. That's the movie. It was bad in the early part, and it got great at the end. So it's appropriate for Joseph that he gets blessed after a hard life of trials and tribulations. But I want you to look at 28 again, because I want you not to miss this. This is the appropriateness of this blessing from God. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel. They were still tribes. And this word tribe here, that's translated tribe in this passage and also in verse 16, the tribes of Israel, is the same word that's in verse 10, the word scepter. It's the rod of authority. Every king had some kind of rod, some kind of staff that signified his authority. And he would sit, and you see it here in Judah. It says, the ruler's staff will never depart from between his feet. He would sit on his throne, the staff would be in between his legs, and it would be to everybody around. He has the rod of authority. Originally a rod for beating people. but now just probably a bejeweled or something special and spectacular covered with gold that says this is the king's authority. And so here's what you can do with that translation in verse 28, is that you can say all these are the 12 rods of authority of Israel. They may not have had great things said about them in every setting, but all of them ended up being the leaders of their tribe. And they all ended up having inheritance in the land. In fact, we can look at Simeon and Zebulun and Naphtali. Nobody in the Bible, I've never heard this in a prayer group ever. Hey, who's the person in the Bible you'd most like to be like? Naphtali. Nobody says that. Because they're kind of forgotten guys. But just because they're forgotten our economy doesn't mean they're forgotten in the economy of God. These are very important guys. These lands mattered, and these territories mattered, and these tribes mattered. And each of these guys, whether Jacob said something good about them or not, they were leaders of their tribe. And their name still resides for us today. We now, 4,000 years later, are still talking about Zebulun and Gad and Asher. Asher, not Ashter. That's not a son. Asher. And so God has a place for them. And every one of their names, as we were singing today, as Matt was leading this, that God is calling our name. It's right here. You may not think that you're that special or that you're that awesome or that you're going to get this great blessing from God, but He knows your name. And He's got a place for you in the inheritance. That's why this map is important, because not all of us are Judahs. Not all of us are Josephs. Not all of us get the privilege of having the King of Kings come from our line. Not all of us get the privilege of having prosperity in the sense of leadership. But all of us are a part, and all of us matter. God has a plan to bless Israel and as His people, and they get to be a part of this people blessing, and they get to be a part of the answer for the sins of the world through Jesus Christ, who will come from these people. An incredible blessing. You see, in fact, when he said, Reuben, you get nothing and you'll like it, he says, but you're still in the family. You still get some inheritance. And the story of Jesus still comes through you. You're still a part of it. So here's the question. Are you blessed appropriately today? You know, some of us in here are like Reuben, Simeon, and Levi. We suffer because of sins we've committed. And there's a lot of people I know that's like, why won't God bless me? Why won't He do something good for me? I'm praying, I'm going to church, you know, I do Christian things. I want to see God's blessing. But we forget very easily, at least I do, how much I've messed up and how much of the pain in my life is caused because of the sins I've committed. This is the hard disconnect for us sometimes. God forgives us instantaneously, but sometimes the repair of the sins of our lives takes time. And so you may be sitting today going, I'm Reuben and Simeon and Levi. I don't understand why I'm being blessed this way. Well, think of all the stuff you've done. See if maybe not all of it's God's fault. Maybe some of it's yours. On the other hand, some of us in here, we are suffering because of sins committed against us. And probably everybody in here falls into that category as well. There's pain in our life because God gives other people around us free choices, and we have to live with them. One of the worst things that you realize about a parent as your kids get older is they get to do whatever they want, and you have to live with that. You can put them in the crib when they're two, and just shut the door and let them scream. You can lock them in there when they're 14. That's okay. Just lock them in. Okay? But you still live with their choices, and try as you might, you don't want to care about it, but you do because they're your kids. So we have kids, we have people that don't like us at work, we have people that compete against us, we have mean neighbors, we have all the above plus more. People do mean things. Some of you have been even more violently abused than that. And you carry that pain and you're wondering, why won't God bless me? Well, He's probably the reason you're here. He's blessed you to get you through it. Some of us suffer because we live in a sin-stained world. But here's the point. The point is that all of us have a place in the will and the plan of God, because there is a God who can combine all the stuff we've done and all the stuff that's been done to us and all the stuff that goes on in the world with the stuff that He wants to do in our lives. And somehow He takes all of that, the stuff of our sin, the stuff of the sins against us, the stuff of the sinful world, and the stuff He wants to do in us, and He makes it a blessing. It's incredible. Somehow, Reuben goes, thank you, I'm blessed. That leads us to important thing number two, Jesus. He's not number two because he's second in this list. It's because I'm saving the best for last. Jesus, I said earlier, comes through the line of Judah. We see Jesus all through this passage, and if we really understand this map properly, we'll understand Jesus as a part of it. You see, early on in Judah, he says, Judah, you're going to be on the hand. Your hand is going to be on the neck. This is a choking. Like, I've won. I'm victorious over my foes. Jesus literally choked out Satan, death, and sin by his death, burial, and resurrection on the cross. It's a picture of Jesus. You are a lion's cub. You guys know where the lion of the tribe of Judah comes from. It comes from this prediction that there will be a powerful one like the king of the jungle that rules the animal kingdom. He will rule the world because of his power. And then finally, this coolest picture is that of the scepter. The scepter, verse 10, will not depart from Judah. Again, this rod or stick of authority that shows that somebody's the king. But I want you to see what happens in the end of verse 10. The scepter will not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet, until he comes to whom it belongs. Who does this stick belong to? Who gets to hold the authority, the rod of authority that has power over everything? This is a prophecy about Jesus Christ. You guys know how this turns out, right? You know, I think, that down here is this little place called Bethlehem, and that the King David is born there, a man after God's heart, and that nearly 1,000 years later, Jesus Christ, the King of Kings, is born there, and that he would go then to Jerusalem, David would, and he would establish the kingdom of God's city. And Jesus would do his best work there, not in the debates, not in the teaching, not in the miracles, but in the death, burial, and resurrection in Jerusalem. He picked up the staff that Jacob said that Judah would always have in his tribe, and it would never depart. And this means blessing for all. I don't want you to miss this in verse 10. It's very important because we think Old Testament God only cares about Israel. Until he comes to whom it belongs in the obedience of the nations. It's plural. He's not just talking about Israel. He's talking about the Amalekites and the Amalekites. He's talking about the Egyptians. He's talking about the Philistines. He's talking about everyite you can name in the Bible. He has a plan for the nations. This one who's going to rule with the rod, he's going to grab this scepter and he's going to pull all nations together. And God is going to use the 12 blessings for the 12 guys who became the 12 tribes to do this great inheritance thing for all the people in the world. I want you to see this one last thing here, and then we'll wrap it up. Verse 18 is kind of this pause that happens right in the middle of the sons. Jacob says, I look for your deliverance, O Lord. You guys probably know this because you're Bible scholars. The word deliverance there is the word Yeshua, often translated salvation. It is the proper name for Joshua in the Old Testament. It's the proper name in the Hebrew language for Jesus in the New Testament. His name means salvation. And just like right in the middle of all this inheritance, you think that he's assigning territories on a map. You think that he's giving blessings to sons. But right in the middle, he gives us a clue. Here's what this is all about. I'm looking for the salvation, for the deliverance. And he was, of course, pointing to Jesus Christ. And so that's why this map matters to us. Because this map is about Jesus. It's his story. It's his people. It's his lineage. It's his promise. It's the prophecies about him. Which leads us to this one thing. We read this verse, and the first time I read it, I said, are you kidding me? Giving them each a blessing appropriate to him? It occurs to me that these blessings do end up being appropriate. But there is an inappropriate blessing. And that's that you and I could come thousands of years later and we would receive a blessing. That we would be a part of this story. You see, none of the 12 deserved blessing. None of them did. They were all bad. Judah did bad stuff. Joseph did bad stuff. They were all bad guys. They all sinned. They all fell short of the glory of God. None of the 12 really deserved any blessing at all. But they got it because they're part of the family. In the same way you and I don't deserve blessing, we get blessing because God has grace. I was drawn to this psalm this week, Psalm 103. He does not treat us as our sin deserves, or repay us according to our iniquities. For as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his love for those who fear him. As far as the east is from the west, so far has he removed our transgressions from us. As a father has compassion on his children, so the Lord has compassion on us. That is about as inappropriate as it gets. You want to talk about unfair? That's unfair. I don't deserve that kind of love. Neither do you. But through Jesus Christ, you're on the map. Your name matters. You're a part. You see, Reuben may not have gotten a double share as the firstborn, but he was blessed. And Levi didn't get any land, but he was blessed. And Asher may have been born of a handmaid of the least favorite wife, but he was blessed. And Naphtali didn't have a famous descendant come from him, but he was blessed. And you and I are the same. We may have lost our job or not have enough money or be struggling with a relationship, but we're blessed. We may be hurting emotionally, maybe even depressed, but we're blessed. We may not be ever known or do anything famous or big, but through Jesus Christ, we're blessed. I could go on, but I'm going to let some people from our congregation, some of our Eastview people, help you understand and help you find your blessing today.